Well, thank you again for having me these last three Sundays. It's been a real pleasure to be back in the pulpit, and I've enjoyed being with you very much. It wasn't until last Sunday that I realized that Dan Branch attends here as an elder. Dan and I were briefly roommates at Oklahoma Christian, and so it set me to thinking I could probably think up a story to tell about Dan this morning that you would all enjoy. And then it occurred to me that Dan could probably think up a story to tell about me this morning, and he may be doing the elders' announcement later, and I can't risk that. So there will be no stories today. See me after church. In December of 2007, a terrible tragedy occurred in Colorado Springs, not unlike the Uvalde tragedy. A disturbed young man walked onto the campus of New Life Church and began shooting. In the parking lot, he struck four people. Then he entered the building. A female security volunteer heard the noise and ran towards the gunfire. At 80 feet, she saw the man, drew her handgun, and fired while being fired upon. She hit the shooter, causing him to fall to the ground, where he took his life. It was the end to a tragedy that could have been so much worse. About a year after that event, I had the opportunity to hear Brady Boyd, who was then and still is the pastor of New Life Church, share about that experience. He was, of course, very emotional, and at times could hardly contain his feelings. Sometimes he spoke in a barely audible whisper. And then he said something that surprised me. He spoke in praise of the actions of the female security volunteer. In his words, if she had not done that, I would have buried over 100 people. I found those words surprising because it's not often that we hear a Christian leader praising violence of any kind. More often, we hear leaders who are either ambivalent about violence or condemning it altogether. And I'm sure this has to do with the words of Jesus in Matthew 5. If someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. So how do these words reconcile with the pastor's praise of the woman's actions? Do these words of Jesus condemn violence in all forms, even in self-defense? And if not, what do these words of Jesus mean? Today, let's try to answer those questions. Our text is Matthew 5, verse 38 through 42. And by way of reminder, Jesus spoke these words near the Sea of Galilee, perhaps on the traditional site or one very much like it, a hill overlooking the sea. And on that occasion, Jesus said, "You have heard that it was said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if someone wants to sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. If someone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Give to the one who asks you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you." To understand, let's break this down into three parts. I'll approach it in this way. First, we'll consider what the Old Testament has to say about eye for eye. Then we'll look at what the religious leaders of Jesus' day said about an eye for an eye. And finally, we'll look at the point that Jesus makes about an eye for an eye. To start, let's go to the Old Testament teaching, Exodus 21, verses 22 through 25, where we find this phrase. "If men who are fighting hit a pregnant woman and she gives birth prematurely, but there is no serious injury, the offender must be fined whatever the woman's husband demands and the court allows. But if there is serious injury, you're to take life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, bruise for bruise." So under the law of Moses, if one was culpable in hurting another, as is the case here. The punishment was based on the principle of exact retribution, lex talionis in Latin. The principle is stated in our text with the words life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, etc. Thus, if someone intentionally caused the death of someone else, their life was to be taken. If someone caused another to lose an eye, the guilty person must lose an eye. Now, before you pronounce this law as barbaric, stop for a moment and consider the wisdom of this approach to justice. In the first place, it was perfectly just, perfectly fair. If someone intentionally hurt someone else, they were hurt in the same way, to the same degree. If someone took a life, their life was taken. If someone caused another to lose an arm, their arm was taken. This was a perfectly just legal system, lex talionis, exact retribution. Not only so, this law had the additional benefit of restraining vengeance and halting blood feuds. Thus, if someone hurt you, then you or your family were limited in seeking vengeance to the same hurt only, at the same level, to the same degree, no more, no less. So if someone maliciously caused you to go blind, you couldn't kill that person, which would be the temptation. Instead, you could only seek the blindness of the offender, an eye for an eye. When I was a young male many years ago, in the pack of males that I ran with, one of the ways we showed affection to each other was to hit each other on the shoulder when they weren't looking. I can't explain that. I'm sure it had to do with testosterone or some kind of chemical, but that's what we would do. And of course, when that happened, when your friend hits you on the shoulder, you couldn't leave it undone. I mean, you couldn't not retaliate in some way, so you had to hit back. And that return hit was always just a little bit harder, if not a lot harder. And of course, now the scales are unbalanced. And so he has to hit you back. And of course, he hits you back not equal, a little bit harder than that. And on it went. So really, once it started, it just escalated. The problem, of course, is that when one seeks vengeance, one always wants just a little bit more. Go a little bit beyond what was done, and so the scales are left unbalanced. I'm fortunate to have 6 grandchildren, 2 granddaughters, and 4 grandsons. And the oldest grandsons are 6 and 8. I saw them recently. They live in Memphis. And they like to get physical, of course, at that age. And so we wrestle a lot. And the next oldest has really come to enjoy hitting his fragile grandfather when he isn't looking, usually in the stomach. And he can hit hard. And so when he does that to me, I can't leave it unanswered. I have to hit him back. And he says I hit him too hard, and then he catches me, and usually his mother ends it for both of us before we go too far into it. But it's like that with vengeance. You can't just balance the scales. It always wants a little bit more. So back to the ancient Israelites. When they wanted to seek revenge, the law was clear. The vengeance had to be equal, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand. So the violence theoretically would not escalate. And as long as the law was followed and everything was equal, there were no blood feuds between tribes or families in Israel. And another thing to realize, important thing, is that when the people did seek justice or vengeance, they were supposed to do so through the courts, through the justice system. This was not a law to be personally enacted, although I'm sure there were times when it was. Instead, the principle of lex talionis, or exact retribution, was to be carried out in the existing justice system. We know this because of the reference to the court in the passage. Actually, personal vengeance was forbidden. Leviticus 19:18 said, Do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against one of your people, but love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. So there was a personal prohibition against personal vengeance. But if you did seek justice or vengeance, it was to be done in the courts. Now, it's important to understand the early association of vengeance with the phrase an eye for an eye to appreciate what Jesus is teaching in this case and the background to that. Even though eye for eye was given as a guide for punishment in the courts, over time it became associated with personal vengeance, and not only so, but the idea of exact retribution was lost. It was just a phrase that justified seeking personal vengeance, an eye for an eye. And when we turn to what was going on in first century during Jesus' day, that's what we find. When Jesus said, to begin this passage, you have heard that it was said, while he does quote from an Old Testament verse in this case, he was more referencing what was being said about that verse, what was being taught about that verse by the religious leaders. And in their case, they associated eye for an eye with, it almost became a mandate for seeking personal vengeance and divorced from the current legal system. And no doubt, much of this had to do with their hatred of their Roman occupiers. The Romans controlled their lives, their country, their practices, made them pay exorbitant taxes, and they hated the Romans for that. Taking revenge was somewhat common, and I'm sure you've heard about the zealots who would put knives under their cloaks and stab unsuspecting Roman soldiers in crowded places. Those things were honored and even praised in various circles in first century Palestine. The religious leaders, by their use of that phrase, encouraged such by their misrepresentation of Old Testament teaching on revenge, using it not to curb violence, but in fact to encourage even more violence. And unfortunately, this is how many people seek revenge today. A number of years ago, not far from here, two high school seniors, David and Diane, were engaged with plans to be married. And then one evening, David had a relationship with another girl, Adrian, and in guilt confessed it to Diane. Diane was not only hurt, but was enraged and announced that the only way this wrong would be atoned for is that Adrian had to die. And that's what happened. Today, Diane and David remain in prison for their actions. It's a sad story. Vengeance is a sad story. It's such a powerful human emotion when we seek vengeance personally, and we're so often tempted to take more for good measure so that an emotional hurt becomes a mandate for murder. The result is so much hurt for so many people. Little has changed since the days of Jesus. And all this points us to the fact that we desperately need to hear what Jesus has to say about vengeance. So let's take a look. As we've discussed, when Jesus said these words, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, he was addressing, I'm persuaded, the subject of vengeance, not violence in general. And I'm persuaded that his hearers would have heard him in that way, addressing the subject of vengeance, not violence in general. And thus, with these words, Jesus is not addressing violence in general or self-defense or serving in law enforcement or serving as a soldier. Instead, he was addressing the subject of vengeance. And that's my persuasion. I have some people that I respect dearly that take a different interpretation and believe this calls for pacifism, no violence at all. And I respect that. And if that's your persuasion, I respect that as well. That's not my understanding. And based on my understanding, let me make several points here. First, self-defense is not wrong. If an evil person tries to hurt you or your family, I believe it's acceptable to defend yourself. You have not violated the teaching of Jesus if you use violence to defend yourself or your family. Second, serving in law enforcement is not wrong. Sometimes law enforcement officers must use violence to restrain even evil people from hurting innocent people. That's unfortunate, but it is an acceptable thing. In a sense, it's a good thing because evil people are protected. The same can be said for serving as a soldier. So, although it's always unfortunate, the use of violence has its place. When used properly, it serves the good purpose of restraining evil in the world. And Jesus does not condemn here this good use of violence with these words. So back to the dilemma we raised at the beginning, where we questioned the pastor's words in praise of the female security officer. I say he was right to do that, that what she did was a good thing in protecting so many innocent people. So what does Jesus mean on a positive side with these words? He means this: a disciple is not to seek personal vengeance when he or she has been wronged. But there's actually more to it than that. Not just that we're not to seek personal vengeance, but when we are wronged, we're to return evil with good. So he makes four applications there. First, if someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. In that culture, a slap, he was referring to a backhanded slap across the face, a gross insult. And Jesus says, if someone insults you like that, don't seek vengeance, but to turn to him the other cheek also. Return evil with good. Second, if someone wants to sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. In other words, if someone wins an unjust settlement against you, give him more than he won. In other words, when you're hurt, again, don't return evil with evil, but return evil with good. Third application, if someone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. In that day, the law was if a Roman soldier came along, could recruit someone to carry his pack for 1 mile. Jesus says, go 2 miles, from which we get the expression, the second mile. Fourth application, give to the one who asks you and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. You know, sometimes we refuse to help other people because they have hurt us at some point or because we're angry with them or something along those lines. And so the motive for not helping is a form of revenge. Jesus says when it comes to helping others, we're not to return evil with evil, but evil with good. Don't withhold, but share. So, the teaching of Jesus is not simply to condemn personal violence, personal vengeance, but also, when we've been harmed, not simply to walk away, which is a good start, but to return evil with good. And so let me tell you about two people that did that very thing. Elizabeth and Frank Morris were home one evening when they got a phone call 2 days before Christmas. The caller on the phone said, come to the hospital quickly. Your son, Ted, has been in an accident. And later that evening, their only child died. They learned the next day that the driver of the car that swerved into their son's car had been drunk and had walked away from the accident. They found out his name, Tommy. In that moment, Elizabeth said, she began to feel hate. In her words, we wanted him in prison. We wanted him dead. From that day, Elizabeth lived to see that Tommy got what he deserved. She anxiously awaited his court date. Nothing else mattered. She felt only hate for Tommy. He was sentenced to 5 years probation. Elizabeth devoted herself to seeing that if Tommy violated his probation, he would be caught and sent to prison. And I forgot to mention, by the way, that Frank and Elizabeth were Christians. Because Elizabeth made it a vow to know Tommy's every move, she eventually got to know him. She found out that he was very sorry for what he had done. In the meantime, Tommy did violate his parole and was sent to prison. Elizabeth went to see him in prison. Tommy asked Elizabeth to forgive him. She asked him to forgive her. In her words later, "The hate and the bitterness I was feeling was destroying me. I needed to forgive Tommy to save myself." Forgiveness was requested and given on both sides. In time, Frank and Elizabeth petitioned the court to let them pick up Tommy for church and then to lunch at their house before they returned him to prison that day. When Tommy was released from prison, the relationship grew, and Tommy's life changed for the better. Later, in telling this story, Elizabeth admitted she transferred many of her maternal feelings to Tommy. In her words, "I figured I wasn't able to help my son Ted anymore. Maybe I could help Tommy." For his part, Frank admitted it had been easier to forgive Tommy than to build a relationship with him afterwards. In his words, "I knew God required me to forgive Tommy at some point, but I could have dropped it after that and probably have felt more comfortable. But I felt that forgiveness required me to go the second mile and see what I could do for him." And in forgiving and loving, Frank and Elizabeth overcame evil with good. They were salt to a world desperately in need of it. I invite you to stand and sing.